Welcome to Your Aged Care Compass podcast. Join us to find out how to support your older loved ones at home. We're going to help you make sense of Australia's aged care system. We talk about legal and financial considerations for aging and how chronic health conditions impact your older loved ones' well-being. And we share real life stories of where it went wrong for people and how we got them back on track. Welcome to the second episode of your Aged Care Compass podcast. So, Corey, take us back to the beginning and tell our listeners why we do what we do.
So in 2017, people who would be familiar with our story, that was a really big year for us, Hachelle. I mean, Dad had those four strokes on top of his dementia, his Alzheimer's disease. He'd been admitted to hospital four times. We were at the hospital so much throughout that year. It was a huge year for us. And then Dad passed away in January of 2018. And after that huge year, certainly for me, I was just trying to process it all. I went back to work then for full time and was really reflecting on that previous year and grappling with my own grief and trying to make sense of that. And two things started to happen in 2018 that sort of set the scene for what was to come. One of the things I found was happening at work was that more and more of my colleagues, treating teams, the medical teams, and my colleagues who were allied health clinicians and my nursing colleagues as well were calling on me more and more to go and sit with and speak with other families who wanted to learn about the aged care system and they wanted to take their older loved ones at home. And there were people who wanted to take their older loved ones home to die at home as well. And they just didn't know what to do or where to start. I would come in and sit with these families and explain to them what they needed to know and what they needed to do and how they could make that happen. So that at work, that was happening more and more. And then in me coming to terms with that huge year that 2017 was and processing my own grief, I needed an outlet too. So I started to write. And that's when I launched my first blog, Dementia, My Dad and Me, where I just spoke about really what the last 8 to 10 years looked like. Stepping back in time when I first became aware that Dad's memory just wasn't what it used to be and he was losing interest in doing the things that he previously liked to do. He was becoming a little more sedentary. He just wasn't living within his life. And so I got him referred to a geriatrician and the process started. And I guess in my gut feeling was that I knew where we were going, but we had to go through all those investigations to arrive at where I knew we were going. So Dad was initially diagnosed with depression and that was treated and his mood lifted somewhat, but there were still signs there for me that something wasn't quite right. So again, went back to the geriatrician, did some more investigations. And at that point, Dad was diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment, which can be like a pre-dementia diagnosis. It's an acknowledgement that there's something that's not quite right with the person's cognitive function, but might stay at mild cognitive impairment. As we know, it did progress to dementia and Dad was eventually diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. I spoke about that in my blog, that there was this process, these many months of getting those investigations done and ruling out anything else that it might be before that diagnosis was made. And people often say, why does it take so long? And it's because geriatricians or psychiatrists or psychogeriatricians, they want to get this diagnosis right. So they need to take the time to look at the pathology, look at the imaging, look at what's going on in the person's situation. The whole clinical picture needs to be investigated before they arrive at that diagnosis. So I talked about that. And then in my blog, I spoke about the year of 2017 and what that meant for us. And then I spoke about Dad's death as well. So it was really, that blog was about me getting all my feelings out about what had happened and just processing my grief. And what I didn't expect when I started to write, because it was a cathartic experience for me and I, you know, it was all about me just dealing with it. But what I didn't expect was that people came back to me then and I started to get emails from people about how that blog had given people comfort that were going through similar things. And people commented on how I made the aged care system easier for them to understand, and they were able to learn what their options were as yeah. well. So the blog had this unintended outcome that I didn't see at the time of actually teaching people how the aged care system worked. So throughout 2018, this was happening, and then an idea began to take hold in my head and I couldn't ignore it. So by the end of 2018, I realized that although I'd had this wonderful career in the public health system and I'd done all these great projects, there was so much more to do. And the only way I was going to be able to do what I felt needed to be done and empower people with knowledge and know-how and potentially drive some change within the aged care system because people were empowered with that knowledge, I realized that I had to resign and launch a business as an aged care navigator.
And there are so many people who are glad you did.
Yes, it's been busy. Here we are 5 years on from me launching See Me Aged Care Navigators, and I have never looked back. It's just been the most amazing time learning how to run a business, speaking to people, writing about our aged care system, and just supporting people to the foundation of what we do, to show people that they were able to get the support for their older loved ones that we were able to get for Dad.
Yeah, and that's so important. So how would you describe what we do?
I guess in a nutshell, it's what people say about us is we're the human compass for Australia's aged care system, educating people right at the beginning before they make that initial contact with the gateway, which is My Aged Care, teaching them what that is and what they need to say and how to prepare before they make that contact. Because at that initial point of contact, it can go very wrong for people. And if people get the wrong information or they don't portray their own situation accurately, is where they get off on the wrong path. And if they do get off on the wrong path at that initial point of contact, the services or the support that they need in home will be delayed by many more months and even years. Or in some situations with some of our clients, they would never have received that support unless they contacted us and we explained how the system worked and showed them how to get back on track.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a human compass. We're there to support people. So we really care about people getting the right outcomes. And as we always encourage people to come back and tell us, what kind of approvals did you get in your ACAT assessment? And how did it go when you signed up with your home care package provider? Caring about the people and caring about the outcomes that they have. So not just teaching them or telling them and then they go away and try to figure it out. Just being there for them at those different touch points, whether that's they come back and read one of our blogs or like now, perhaps jumping on and listening to one of our podcast episodes, but just being there and guiding them and supporting them the whole way through the system.
And I think to give our listeners a bit of context or a bit of understanding about what that can look like, what kinds of situations do people find themselves in?
These situations that we often help them out with is where they have become lost in the system. So I remember Mr. and Mrs. P, a beautiful couple that we had whose sons lived overseas. And Mr. and Mrs. P weren't managing very well at home, but they were very accomplished academics, very intelligent people, and that's what they wanted to portray. So
yes,
each time Mr. and Mrs. P came to getting an assessment within the system, they didn't get the approvals that they should have got because Mr. P wanted to portray that they were able, that they were managing, that they didn't need any help, and their sons were literally tearing their hair out by the time they came to us because Dad kept derailing the process.
Exactly. He did. And like you say, such an intelligent person, but obviously didn't realise that by portraying that coping, he was stopping himself.
Yeah, he was sabotaging his own situation.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it really isn't an unusual situation when Mr. and Mrs. P could be any number of our clients who, because they're so stoic and they never asked for support before, and they often say to us, I'm okay, I'm managing, there's someone else that needs the support more than me.
Yes.
It's lovely and it's really considerate, but it's actually not helpful to their situation because they need the help.
Yeah. And I remember too, there were a couple of hospital admissions in there. And still they were sitting at entry level.
Yep. And they just didn't progress. Every time they had a support plan review with the RAS or the Regional Assessment Service, Mr. P just wanted to tell them how great they were doing. And it was frustrating. We had to have some conversations with them about not saying that. They had to be honest. And they really had to portray the situation as it was. And it was hard for him. Beautiful couple. They were quite a bit of work, though, for them to get their heads around. If they keep saying that they're okay, they're not going to get this support. And then when they reach that point of really needing it, it's going to be too late. Their options for returning home with support, they will be well past that. And that's where they would be pushed into potentially moving into an aged care facility.
And I do remember from that too, where we got involved in, and you actually spoke to the Regional Assessment Service. In the end,
yep.
We had to get them past.
Yeah, it was really tricky. I did reach out to the RAS assessor who was involved with Mr. and Mrs. P, and we had a great chat. The RAS assessor wasn't aware that Mr. P was presenting the situation that wasn't real.
Right.
And the RAS assessor also hadn't really understood what was available at the next level, at the ACAD level. So they knew that it was increased support, but at that time, the RAS assessor was just giving Mr. and Mrs. P more referral codes. And what Mr. and Mrs. P didn't realise was that those referral codes, otherwise known as approvals, never got actioned because the providers at entry level didn't have the capacity, didn't have the staffing to deliver the services. Fantastic that they had all these approvals or referral codes, but they weren't getting any services because the providers weren't able to deliver that. So when I had that conversation with the RAS assessor, it was very educational. And I explained to the RAS assessor the different programs that these people were eligible for at the ACAT level, one being short-term restorative care because Mr. and Mrs. P needed some clinicians to become involved to reable them or help restore their functions. That 8-week program was fantastic for both of them. And then, of course, when they got to the ACAT, they were also approved for home care packages. So the home care package, that's coordinated support. So rather than have those fragmented services, many providers involved at entry level, or in the case of this couple, they didn't have any, moving up and getting that ACAT assessment and then getting home care packages meant that they could choose one provider who would coordinate all that support for them. Yeah, beautiful couple, but
it was such
a process getting them to understand that they weren't doing themselves any favours, certainly weren't doing their sons any favours who were just so frustrated and stressed out. But by showing them how the system worked and the benefits of being honest about their circumstances, eventually we were able to get them the approvals that they actually needed.
And that's the important thing too, Coral, the approvals that they needed.
Yeah.
We're not talking about making things up. It's the approvals that are
needed. They actually needed, yeah.
And then I'm just thinking too about Mrs. T, the family meeting at the GP that you were invited to.
This really surprised me, and that's one of the stories I talk about in my book, where I was invited to a family meeting at the GP practice and the elderly lady was there with her adult children. And the elderly lady, Mrs. T, had been living in her home. She was fine. Mm. I had visited her many times at home. Yes, she had a high set home. There were 13 steps at the front of her house and the back of her house. She hadn't had any falls. She was still managing to get out into the community. She would ring a taxi and go out and buy a few groceries every few days. She was actually doing okay, but her family all lived away except for one of the adult children who was going to go traveling. And their kids were afraid that something might happen while they were all away and what would happen to mum. And so they arranged this family meeting at the GP's, and I thought I was going along to tell them what support would was available. And when I got there, I was a bit blindsided and I realized that the GP had invited me to back him up and back the kids up, that they felt that the best place for mum was in a nursing home. Mum was completely ambushed. Obviously, she didn't take well to this in the meeting. There were a few raised voices. There was a lot of emotion in that meeting. But what it revealed to me was that the GP as well just really didn't understand what was available in home. So we had this elderly lady who had no formal support. She wasn't even in the aged care system. And the family and the GP wanted to take this huge leap of moving her into a nursing home because they felt that was going to be the safest place for her. And that actually came up in this family meeting, this conversation is, what if she has a fall? And my response to that is people can fall anywhere. If they're in an aged care facility, they can still have a fall. The lady was cognitively sharp. She didn't have an impairment. She didn't have dementia. And really, she should have been more involved in that discussion. But the good thing that came out of that was that when we were having that family meeting, I just stopped everyone for a minute and told them what would be available to her at home and that we should probably trial getting her some in-home support first and see how that went. So the upshot of that was that she did get an ACAT assessment. She was approved. She eventually got a level 3 home care package. Because her kids were all moving away, she didn't have that support. So all that formal support had to come in and replace the support that her children were providing for her. So we did that, and that lady ended up living in her home for another year before then it was her decision when she was ready to accept moving into an aged care facility, and that's when she entered the nursing home. But it gave her another 12 months of in her own home and then getting her head around the fact that at some point she would move into a facility to get the support that she needed.
But on her terms.
On her terms.
Great outcomes. And I guess just a snapshot of the issues or the situations people find themselves in.
Yeah, Shell, I guess getting back to why do we do what we do? We just want people to have options. We want them to have that awareness of what the aged care system can provide for them so that they can make informed choices. That there doesn't necessarily have to be this huge leap of moving into a nursing home. There are those options of in-home support, and giving people education, guidance and support is knowing that as their needs change, they know what programs that they need to access to get that support.
Excellent, Coral. I think that wraps us up for this episode.
Yeah, I think we've had a good chat about why we do what we do.
What we do.
And we'll leave it at that. And we hope that we'll be chatting with you all in episode 3 next week.
Hey, care community. Thanks for listening to this episode. So you never miss a show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. If you'd like to know more about what we do, head to our website, cmeacn.com.au.